You're listening to KRUULP 100.1 FM, Fairfield, Iowa.
This is Icon Art Radio. I'm Bill Teeple. I'm here with my co-host, Alan Cobb. And our guest today is Robert Horline, who's showing at Icon Gallery this month. And it's a special show because Robert was the very first solo show that we put on at the original, it was called Gallery 51 East then, but it morphed into Icon, in the third floor above the square in the old gallery in January, February of 2002.
Two.
So that was exactly, well, very close to 10 years ago. So we're celebrating our 10th anniversary, and this is kind of launching our 10th anniversary celebration by having another show with Robert. And we're also including Jim Weidel, who we're going to interview next week. And tune in for that. Okay, Bob, what'll we talk about? This is all new work, and I'd like to talk about maybe where you're at right now. I'll say a few words about him. He's like a veteran abstract painter. When I think of someone who like goes to work every day pretty much as a painter and paints into the night and has painted for 40 years and that's his identity, I think of Robert. And so as I said in a notice I sent out for a lecture he's gonna give tomorrow,
That simultaneous with when the show comes on
the radio? Yeah, we won't go into
that
because this show might be played at a later date.
and tomorrow's Saturday. The show probably will air Sunday.
Right, so let's rewind. And but what I said was, what did I remember? Now I forgot what I said.
Well, Bob's giving a talk at MUM this Sunday, this Saturday, just before you heard this program, if you're listening to the program in 2012.
Right, so you missed it, but it was probably really good.
It was
right?
Fantastic. We're really excited by this.
Oh, now, wait a minute, stop everyone. What I said, if you want to hear about abstract painting from the inside, hearing Bob talk, and as he's going to talk, now you're going to hear it from the inside of being what painting, non-representational abstraction with a little bit of representation sneaking in there is all about. In any case, when I hear you talk, I feel like here's a painter talking. Now, what do you have to say about all that?
Well, I guess I better come up with something.
I guess we could cut all this and start over, but let's not.
No, let's go. So anyway, thanks for having me. I was happy and honored to be there 10 years ago, can you believe it? And I'm still happy and honored to be there 10 years later, so thanks.
You're welcome, we're loving it.
Well, what I'm gonna talk about at MUM, and why don't I talk about that now, is people ask me pretty often, why are you doing this, and what is it you're trying to do? And the short form answer usually takes 30 seconds, but the long form answer might take a long time. So this will be the medium form answer. People ask me questions like, where do the ideas come from? How do you evaluate them? How do you know if it's right or good? Right or wrong doesn't apply, but how do you know if it's better or worse? How do you make your decisions? Because painting is mostly a non-reversible process. What I mean is that when you do something, you can cover it up, but you can't cover it up without it being there. So whatever you do is there. So like I always tell my kids, actually, I'm usually talking to them and I say, I just get farther and farther and farther out on my limb. And sometimes it breaks and I fall off. But that's what you have to do. And the only way that I know of to evaluate what I'm doing is based on my feelings about it. You certainly can't quantify it in intellectual ideas, although we all sort of try. But that doesn't really work, or else I'd be writing essays. And you can't like make a theory or a formula out of it, or else I ought to be doing that. So what you do is you start in a certain direction, somewhat unknown, somewhat unclear, and then you proceed based on, well, I ought to do this, and then, no, that didn't quite work, maybe I'll shift the color a little greener, et cetera, et cetera. And then finally, after many, many processes, you end up at the end of the painting. And oftentimes I feel, and I think it's a helpful thing, that when the process is happening clearly without a lot of conflict, it seems to guide itself. And a painting starts out, and I may have in my mind that I'm going to take it in one direction, but it takes itself where it wants to go, and oftentimes even somewhat against where I think I'm taking it. The way that comes out is I try things and they just don't work. And they don't work, and so then I try something else and it does work, and eventually it just gets greener and greener and greener. And it was supposed to be a red painting. It wasn't going to be like that. But I don't think that's a wrong thing. I think that's a right thing, because when you're functioning as a painter, you need to be in the moment. You need to be working on what you're actually doing and seeing right at that moment, rather than some idea you had a minute ago, an hour ago, or a year ago. That's already the past.
So who's the enjoyer here as you're painting?
Yeah, good question.
Is it that there's an intelligence inside of you? Is there a something inside of you that's saying that the painting, you're talking about the painting itself, but actually what I think is happening is something inside of you, looking through your eyes, is witnessing the activity that's going on the picture plane, and it's saying yes, yes, no, no, yes, yes. And it's like you're getting at some kind of like an inner perfection that's inside of you that's trying to realize itself. Is that kind of what's going on?
Yeah, it's the making of a series of paintings. It's also true of one painting, but especially true over, say, many paintings and maybe a long period of time, is it's a searching sort of thing where you're searching for something. And oftentimes, I always say it's a search where you begin somewhere and you're not quite clear, and then you proceed in ways that you don't know what you're doing, and then you arrive at a conclusion that you hadn't foreseen at all. But all that's kind of true. You're like wandering around in the fog, but there's some slight thread of guidance, and that has to do with intuition, and that has to do with the individual. Certainly my thread wouldn't be the same as anybody else's. And I think over a period of time, as an artist matures, they find their thread. And Bryce Marden said it well. He said that at some point, you start as an art student and you make art that's about art, or it's about somebody else's art, or it's about trying to do something. And then you make art and you make art and you make art, and somewhere you begin making art about your own art. And that's really what it's about. And I think that's right. I think you maybe that's the whole search, is to more and more find out what you can do that's interesting and maybe beautiful and maybe valuable. And you know, certainly as an artist, I've seen there's an awful lot of things that I can't do very well. I always think I can, if I really want to, I can sort of do most anything. But sort of do doesn't make it. There's some things that I really have a reason to do, and a lot of other things that are just not necessary. So I try to keep going in a certain direction over time.
But when we're looking at your art and thinking about your art, I feel like here's someone who's a master of this. You know, that territory you've carved out for yourself, you have mastery over. And I feel it when I look at those works, because you've explored this territory so long and so deeply that the intimacy that you're experiencing and that yes inside that's happening as you paint it comes across to me. And the more you paint, the richer and deeper, and the more familiar with the narrative I am, having kept with it for 10, 20 years, watching your work come out. And it just seems, although you're exploring a lot of different territory, because you seem to be an explorer, not someone who's just trying to, not a one-note guy, but it's all more and more recognizable as you, and it's deeper and deeper and richer. And so every time I come to your studio or we put things up at Icon, I'm just like, I'm entranced by it. You know, I love your work. And the show that's at Icon right now, which will be there through April 28th, and maybe morphed a little bit beyond that or a little bit longer, but at least through April 28th, as is in 2012, is magnificent. And I have created a new section at Icon that I call Bill's Room, where I am allowed to be a little more subjective and personal in my hangings and in the activity that goes on there. And I've hung two very special paintings by Bob in there that'll knock you out if you come to Icon and check them out. Also, what we're doing with this month is celebrating Robert Horline all together throughout the town. And he has paintings in three different venues. The paintings at Icon. He also has paintings at the Unity Gallery in the library at MUM, at Maharishi University of Management. I guess you can call them and figure out where the library is. And at Teeple Hansen Gallery on the corner of Burlington and Maine. He's a featured artist this month, so Bob is being celebrated, and he deserves it.
Well, I don't know. One thing I wanted to respond to, the idea of mastery of something, I would only accept and identify with that as being maybe a master of searching and getting a little better. A mastery as a destination, I would never feel that I arrived. But if I can learn to search better, I think good artists, when I think of any good artist, right off the top of my head, what they did wasn't so much make the final answer to the question, but they kept asking better and better questions and probing deeper into the meaning of, into the sort of complex web of meaning. And if I can probe deeper, then that seems like a right thing. I don't think I could ever arrive at being a really good artist. I can only be searching for being a better artist. I could do that.
Yeah, I kind of feel like there's a, when I'm doing my work, that there's a completely invisible internal sense of something that I would probably really like. And then I don't have any, I can't see what that is. And so I can't do anything very deliberate to make it happen, to actually create it explicitly. And so the exploration that I'm doing is finding out if, does this get me closer to it or not? And then I do that. And if it doesn't get me closer to it, then I wish I hadn't done it. Or in some cases, depending on the art form, I can undo it and go in a different direction. But it's kind of like an exploration of your own finest desire through something that's external, if that makes any sense. You know, you're messing with physical reality, but you're trying to find something there or organize something there or result in something there that reflects something that's very, very close to you, that you'll like it when you see it. And liking it, you know, can be on any level and any dimension. Doesn't mean the prettiest thing I've ever seen or the sweetest sound I've ever heard. It just means that there's a certain kind of subtlety and a certain ineffable direction that I really would love to experience. And I'm trying to arrange for myself to have that experience. And then if I get anywhere near it, that's great. And usually I can't even tell if I got near it because the process of doing it has kind of obliterated my sensitivity to it. But later I may discover that I liked it.
kind of sounds like the process of the creation and the why of the creation.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, in a way, it probably is, you know, a little microscopic variation on, you know, creating a universe.
And I think that's always wonderful about being an artist or a painter. You know, we mm-hmm. can't, you know, transform the entire world around us, but when we have that picture plane that's 24 by 24 that's blank and it's just a field of all possibilities, mm-hmm. we can practice being a creator. We can practice the process of creation before us, and it's just the process you described, and it's pretty magical and marvelous that we have that.
Yeah, it's never, for me, it's never not exciting when I mix up some paint on my palette, mm-hmm. and then I take the brush and I just start to put it on. It's always really exciting right then.
Yeah.
And then it can go any which way after that.
Yeah.
But something about just seeing that color arrive, mm-hmm. even any color, or even not color, but just seeing something arrive in that unmanifest blank space in front of you, it's very exciting.
Yeah.
And that particular first stroke, wherever it comes from, and the intelligence behind it and the why, it becomes a seed then for everything else. And like you said, from that point on, nothing can really be covered up. You cover things up, but the evidence is behind. So everything feeds on everything else, and it leads to some kind of one conclusion for that particular painting.
Mm-hmm. Right, which is a one increment, maybe one page of this chapter of the longer novel. And I really do view paintings like that I don't think even the idea of one painting sort of encompassing a whole lot of, you know, one painting being representative even of what I'm thinking about hasn't really happened yet. It's just all of them together are little different angles and little different way of pursuing this something. And there are a lot of different ways, obviously. I really do think all arts, and for that matter, all life endeavors, there might be exceptions, but mostly everybody is doing the same thing. And that is you pursue a process which leads you towards a goal of feeling better. And feeling can be on a very deep level or on a very simple, superficial level. You walk out in a nice warm sunshine and it feels really good. Mm-hmm. But then when it gets too hot, it doesn't feel so good. Mm-hmm. And, you know, all those, there's that level, but there's also real subtle fulfillments, and you can only kind of hint at it, and you can only get closer to it, and you only get, in my experience anyway, some of it. But it's a good thing, and I think really making paintings is like making cookies in the kitchen. It's not a different process. You're just trying to do something better than you did last time, and trying to find some more meaning, some more life, some more value there. And we could talk about maybe Bill and Alan, you guys talk about this. What do you, is the value of this kind of process mostly for the artist, or is it mostly for the viewer, or what is it? What do you think?
Well, I think first it's for the artist, since he's performing the action. But since it's really something that everyone is doing in some way in their own lives, in the sense that, you know, just living, you're hoping to get it better. You're hoping to somehow produce a result that feels good as a person. It feels, you know, like your life is worthwhile, or your actions have achieved something, or people like you, or whatever it is. And so being able to see these, it's sort of like the wood shavings on the floor. You're carving a path to your soul, and we get to see the wood shavings on the floor of your process, you know. So what we're seeing is evidence of that process at work, and in each artist, we see slightly different variation of the process. And some artists resonate, and we realize, wow, you know, he found something I would never have been able to find. Other artwork, we see it and we say, I know exactly what he's doing. And other times you see something and you think, my God, you can do that, you can go there. Or I have no idea why he's doing that, or where he's going with it, or what it's supposed to achieve, and you know, it doesn't work for me at all. But I think it's good for us to be able to see that process, which is a fundamental aspect of life, can be, in a sense, abstracted from the details of living. And each different art form presents it in a different way. So performing art, you get to see people doing their thing on the stage or whatever. You get to see someone preparing a meal that, you know, who does it with the same kind of finesse and attention that an artist makes a painting. And you can't ever draw lines around these. Ultimately, it's all the same process of living. It's living with some awareness and some appreciation of the process of living.
That's the only difference between just, you know, making breakfast with someone. It's the same thing.
Yeah.
But there's a little more awareness in the process.
Yeah.
What I see is that there's this significant initial relationship between the artist and his art form. And then when it's like put on the pedestal or put on stage, or then we have a three-way relationship, which is, I think, the full story, where we have a relationship between the artist, the work of art, and the viewer. And when those click, then we have a kind of unity experience, and everybody's felt it around great art and in the performance hall and in the dance recital when that happens. Now, let me just say here, for those who have just tuned in their cars, this is Icon Art Radio on KRUU 100.1 FM. And we're Alan Cobb and I, Bill Teeple, are interviewing Robert Horline, the person who's currently showing at Icon Gallery. Okay, we can continue our conversation. Unless we're stopped because I broke the line of thought. But I think that artists can just make art in a cave and never show it. We've discussed this before.
Yeah.
And that can be it. That's just the relationship of you and the work of art. I think the third party in that might be God. I don't know. But then we live in a multiplicity of eyes and souls in the world. So in most cases, the acts of a person and the acts of an artist in the studio become privy to the entire community. And then the work of art becomes this pivot point on which a deep and intimate communication can take place, where we all recognize ourselves as whatever it is that we are.
Well, one question that always comes to mind when I'm doing my own work, and I'd be interested in Bob's thoughts on this, is what is the role of the audience? You know, do I, at certain points when I'm making something, I care about how people react to it. At other points, I don't care I don't even care if they know I did it. After I'm done with it, if I like it, I think, well, it's something I like. Like a sunset, I want to point at it and have someone else see it and say, yes, I see it too. But I also love it if someone comes up and says, boy, that was really great. I really enjoyed that thing you did. Where do you position the audience, if anywhere, in your, either in the process of creating art or as a person who creates art?
Yeah, I've always, the audience has actually always been really important to me, even though everybody like you guys who know me knows that I like to spend big amounts of time by myself. But I'm always thinking, not always means pretty often, about how the work or how the color or how the feeling of something will connect with somebody else. And I guess, I mean, I don't quite know why, except that it seems like it seems important to communicate. And I've always liked all kinds of communication. I read a lot. I really enjoy giving a lecture like this one I'm going to give tomorrow morning, because it gives me a chance to sort of clarify my thinking. And I've always enjoyed that. I guess I come from a family of college professors, so maybe it was just genetically in there. But the idea of making stuff is also in there, and you could just make it and the tree of your making fall in the woods and nobody hears it, and that's all right too. Only I've been really concerned about the audience, and I'd like to have a larger audience, and I'd like to figure out some way, and hopefully in time, since I still feel young, I hopefully will be able to connect with a bigger audience.
Mm-hmm.
And why? I have to really think about that. It just seems like a right, you know, going by feeling, it seems important.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
Well, maybe in a sense, we don't do anything in a vacuum, and acknowledging mm-hmm. that is just as fundamental as the creative process itself.
Yeah.
Even if you did it in a cave by yourself, never showed it to anyone, in some subtle way, you'd still be having an influence on the world.
Yeah, like Lascaux and the other cave in France. Maybe nobody sees it for 30,000 years, but now people are, you know, it's been shown around the world now.
Yeah.
So, I don't think I guess you can destroy your works of art so they won't be seen, but mostly they are seen.
Yeah, and the doing of them is there, and there's some real question as to whether anything that's done is really done in isolation. It's even possible not to be.
But I think the doing is what it's all about.
Yeah.
Does the how meaningful is that stroke?
Yeah.
To me, in this moment of making the stroke, and the rest, you know, we don't have a lot of control over, but we do have the control over making that one stroke, and whether it's a yes or it's a no.
You've been listening to Icon Art Radio, a production of Iowa Contemporary Art, Fairfield.